Human design is a part science, part spiritual system that tells you who you came here to be. You have your own blueprint, your own way of becoming successful, your own way your dreams are going to come true, the way you'll experience the most joy and fulfillment. The instruction manual for how to move through the world is custom to you. When you act according to that manual, when you act as the real you, everything in life comes to you with more ease and less resistance. We all know we're different, yet we're still acting like there's one way to do life. Let's talk about it. To find out your design and the designs of the people in your life, you can visit myhumandesign.com or download the My Human Design app in the App Store and on Google Play.
So you posted on your story today, you shared something that Melissa posted, and you said something about her having a lot of open channels and that she was going to bend time or something. Can you explain to people why you're saying that? Not necessarily about Melissa's chart, but just in general about the chart.
So everybody has different gifts inside of them that we came here to express to their fullest capacity. And we simply cannot look to the level of giftedness that exists in the world as the ceiling of how gifted we can become, because humanity as a whole has only scratched the surface of how superhuman these gifts can be. So a lot of time in the spiritual world, we talk about these concepts that sound crazy, like people throw around like, oh, magic, or oh my God, it's like bending time, which is what I said about her. But there is like a very grounded possibility of all of these things happening. But it's actually on us to push the envelope and see how far we can go with each of those things. Now, the most important gift that you come here to express is what we call your sun personality gift. And that is 70% of your essence. So think about that, where obviously it's amazing to know all the things you're gifted at, but if you really want to put your energy into seeing how high you can take a fractal of humanity, look no further than your sun personality. How you find that in the app is that you look at your incarnation cross and look in the brackets and you see the first number that's in those brackets, and that is your most important gift. And then you want to go to your gifts and you want to read about that gift. It doesn't take a genius, it just takes human imagination to try to connect to the energy of the way I'm describing that gift, and then seeing what would be like, imagine if it was Harry Potter, like what would be the superhuman version of that gift, right? So imagine if your gift is being a good listener, right? What's the mystical version of that? The mystical version of that is literally hearing the silence in between the words, reading between the gaps of the words, understanding the frequency in between the words, right? And extracting so much more wisdom and intel from everything you hear someone say. Because ultimately, what's funny about when you learn to flex this gift is that people are saying one thing, but their auras are saying another. And you really learn to read that. And then all of a sudden you're surprised with what listening sounds like. Obviously on a literal level, it's like actually taking something in rather than, you know, being so distracted by your own persona. But that's only level one of how deep you can take that gift. And I can't even tell you how deep you can go with each gift, because if I don't have them, I can conceptually describe what that is, but you will learn yours in such a way that is unique to you, that even people who have that same gift as you are going to experience it in different ways. So, you know, human imagination is what creates reality, or human potential reality is what creates human imagination. Maybe that gets given to us as premonition of what we can do. But so my takeaway from this is to say, like, take the words in, really sit with them. What is that description of that gift? And then just turn it around in your mind and see what kind of things you could imagine that iterating as. And maybe just by you opening your mind up to realize that you are that gifted, maybe that could happen to you. And the reason why it's important to realize that maybe you are that gifted is because we have this such weird attitude around being gifted, because we think it's like only reserved for a few people. And that gets us into this ego thing of like, am I one of the special ones? And then I feel guilty if I'm special, but I also feel bad if I'm not special. And that whole rigmarole of thought, whereas actually to understand that this is seeded into every single human being, and that's beautiful, but then it's also completely on us to activate it. So gifts aren't just going to be bestowed upon you and you're just going to wake up being gifted. It's like you have to work for it. Even if you're someone who, like Mozart, was born with more of the access to that gift, it's like that daily devotion of giving energy to that thing and understanding that you know what you're doing as you're giving the energy to that thing. That's what kind of enters you into that dance with that gift to say, you know what? You're on loan to me in this lifetime. And that's amazing. And that means that I have no wherewithal or no qualification in saying whether my essence is good enough or not, because it's already incredible. The universe is not going to waste energy to incarnate you if it isn't going to give you a slice of its own divinity and seed it into you, embed it into you. And then this is where the co-creation comes in. It's on you to respect that divinity enough, to revere that divinity enough to say, I am going to devote my life to actually see and find out how much I can get this out of me and into the world, because that is my duty, not my choice. It's not for me to sit around and say, how gifted am I? Do I feel worthy? Do I not? All this and that. That's a waste of time, and that's ego. The lack of ego is to say, oh, I get there's something in me. I don't know what it is. My logical mind is way too small to even conceive of it. But if I can play with it in my imagination and say to it, let's see what you got. I'm going to see where you can take me. And that's going to be my promise to you in this life. Then watch the energy completely change around your relationship with your giftedness.
And part of what limits our ability to see the full, like the highest expression of what our gifts could be, is our mind, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're going, oh, we're reading what you wrote about gift 13, which is about listening. And we're going listening. And we're deciding what that means, rather than, I told you I'm reading The Gene Keys for the first time by Richard Rudd. We did an episode with him. I'll link it in the show notes. He's amazing. Brilliant. He said there's a difference for gift 13. There's a difference between listening and hearing. Hearing mm-hmm. is like the oral experience of actually hearing someone speak, but listening happens with the full body. And so like all of these gifts have almost like a full body like experience of them. And is that correct?
Yes. It's an auric dance that you're doing with another human or with life that is activating something inside your energy body. So yes, on the literal level, it's has a locus to your ear, right? Because that's where scientifically, when we looked for it, that's where it deduced it down. The second that someone looked, it's like the Schrodinger's cat of it all, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's happening with our full senses, our full body, our auric field. And
will you
that's
explain
how...
what you mean when you say an aura interaction? Because I think people think they know what you mean, but will you further explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so human design, really, when you boil it down, is the science of how your aura functions, which is not just your physical body, but your energy body. So imagine if you extend your arms out on either side of you, for as far as that goes, if you draw a circle around you, that's how far your energy extends. It's about 6 feet surrounding you, and it's invisible, but that doesn't mean it's any less real. And this aura has the flavor of your essence underneath it, right? It's shining and radiating out according to your soul's signature, flavor, essence, whatever. Now, there's other things that go into your aura, such as conditioning, thoughts, intentions, actions, any misalignment, any alignment. So imagine it's this like big soup of everything you're ever doing, thinking, being, whatever. But underneath that, there is a very mechanical function of your aura. And that's actually what your energy type is. Your energy type is, how does your aura function? How does it give energy when it's out in the world, when you're just doing your thing? And how does it receive energy? How does it transmute energy? How does it take in energy? How does it get energized? How does it get depleted? All that sort of thing. So a very practical way to kind of understand that the aura is real is, you know, when someone walks in the room and you feel them looking at you and you turn around, you haven't even thought about, oh, someone is looking at me, let me turn around. Your aura has already had that auric exchange with that person, knows what's going on without your brain knowing what's going on. And that's a very auric interaction, right? So that stuff is going on all day, every day. And you just can't hear it because it's doing its thing, whether you tell it to or not. And the reason why you can't hear it is because you think that it's all going on and all the control of your life is happening in your mind. So your mind is saying, oh, I don't like that person, or oh, I like that they're looking at me, because you've been conditioned to want validation or whatever. So the mind is actually slower and it's only catching up with the stories that it knows and the conditioning that it knows, and it's just trying to frame everything that's going on. But ultimately, that doesn't matter, because your auras are doing a dance that has nothing to do with you, whether you like it or not. So you can tell yourself as much as you want that you really like that person, or make yourself think that you like that person and force yourself to be with them. And you know, we've all done this, but we actually aren't getting anything from them when we're with that person, right? So if we were listening to our auras and just watching them rather than trying to attach the stories, we would get a lot more out of the auric dance that we do with other human beings. But instead we're like, that means we have to like everybody, or it's not okay to not be drawn to someone, or you should be drawn to this kind of person because what are they can give you or make happen for you, or all that rubbish. So the auric field is, that's what human design really maps. It's like, this is your energy body. Your body, physical body, sits within the energetic body. It is just the crystallization, the part that you can see. But you have to almost start thinking about yourself as this like big bubble of energy that's walking around, and your physical body is just the part that's visible that you can see. So imagine everything else that's going on around you that you have no idea about, right? And those mechanics are doing their thing, and they're trying to do their thing regardless of how much interference you're going to create by your mind. And sometimes your mind will interfere a lot, sometimes it will interfere less, but either way, your body is trying to move towards its destiny, because we are magnetic as human beings. We have these magnetic monopoles inside us that are trying to literally get pulled towards the other magnet, which is the destiny the universe has planned for you. So you can only get in the way, but you can't slow down heading towards where you're meant to be heading down. And that's what your aura is in charge of doing. So it's very interesting to think about, you know, this whole human design thing is not just some random, it's like a scientific calculation that literally maps out how your electricity inside your energy body likes to function, so that hopefully if you start to honor that, it just helps you get out of its way less. And then what can happen, because your mind isn't so filled with chatter about all the shoulds, you get to kind of sit back and watch your life as it happens, rather than, you know, God forbid, get to the end of your life and think, I never even got to enjoy that journey. I never got to take it in. One of the central tenets of human design is this concept called passenger consciousness, which is where you actually do get to sit in the seat of your soul and enjoy your life as if it is a movie. Even for the trials and tribulations, there's a part of you that's more detached, and you can get to say, oh, wow, like, this is interesting. This is showing me something. I'm experiencing my life in real time, rather than escape to the past or the future or the shoulds from the place of the mind.
And when you're saying passenger consciousness in relationship to the gifts, what I hear in that is that our mechanics want to do its thing on its own. It's not necessarily our mind's intervention that makes us gifted. It's actually our mind's intervention that prevents us from expressing like the highest version of those gifts. So watching yourself be gifted, like letting those, like for example, okay, so I have gift four. Which, do you want to explain a little bit like what gift four is?
So gift four is your main gift.
Correct.
And actually tell me how you are seeing it now, because obviously there's so many layers to it. But tell me, as you stand today, as you've learned to use it more and double down on that as your sun personality gift, how it's expressing.
So I've learned, because like when you read about it, it says logical brilliance, and it's like, oh, you're like supposed to be able to make sense of life, like make sense of the logic of life. So mentally, I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be like this intelligent person. Like, what? Where is this coming from? I don't know. But as I've learned that my mind is not the thing that does my thinking, it's actually like my aura body that does my thinking as a whole. I watch myself think now. I'll have a conclusion that I'm trying to draw, for example. And it's almost like I've told you before, like you'll ask me like, what should we do with this? Or we should do this. And it's almost like I have this track that I like plop an idea into. And it's like a sandbox. Like when you test an app or something, like you put it in a sandbox, we call it a sandbox. And it's like this testing ground where you can let something run its track and see if it actually gets to the end and works. So that's kind of how my aura body thinks. I'll plop an idea in and I just sort of like watch it go down the track. And it's sort of, and it's not even a mental process where I like, I feel the checks and balances happen along the way. I'll just like kind of feel it go, yes, 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 yes. And if it gets to the end of the track, it's almost like I get this conclusion about it. And I'm like, oh yes, this is going to work. This is the way forward or whatever. Oh, this makes sense, I guess, is what my reaction would be. But that's not my mind trying to pull pieces of information that my mind knows in order to decide a conclusion about something. It's really my body.
Mm-hmm. And that's the core central tenet is that you can't use your mind to get you to places where your mind is not in charge. So with whatever your gift is, there's no amount of thinking that can get you there. It's only applying it, applying it, applying it, almost in the dark without any proof that it works until one day you see it come back. And the universe is so kind right now. I feel like it's giving us so much grace because the immediacy that you can see results from is so strong where right now, all you need to do is be like, universe, I'm going to test this out and it's going to give it to you. It's going to show you that it either works or it doesn't so quick because we are in a time right now where the gaps between time, space, and motion are shortening. So we can actually more closely tie the effects to our causes. So it's not leaving us blind guessing in the dark. Like, okay, universe, I'm going to try, you know, getting my mind out of the way. I'm going to try listening to my authority. I'm going to try whatever. Show me what you got. And it does it. And so it becomes easier and easier to trust it, but you lock yourself out of that process when you let your ego tell you that you have to believe you're worthy before you start the thing, that you have to know what your purpose is before you start the purpose, before you engage, before you just give things energy. And that's really the trap that will keep you out of that forever is this, if you stay in the trap of the mind trying to know everything before you start. Instead, you almost have to put your mechanics into motion. Even if you get it wrong, you'll be redirected as long as you're in the game. So this is where it gets really interesting because as long as you're in the game, you will be clearly loudly redirected. When something isn't working, it will be as clear as day. You don't take it personally. You sit with it and you try and see how else it's trying to do things for you or trying to get you to do things. And also what's interesting is that what you're saying, you will watch your body just do things that bypassed the mind. So for example, me, knowing what people need is not a mental thing. I don't sit there and go, what do people need? It's a weird instinctive thing that just happens where I'm like, oh, this person wants an ice cube in their drink. Two, people need to hear this right now, or this is what people are thinking and feeling, or this is what the collective is going through. But it's a sense rather than a thought. And what's interesting to know is that the mind is not completely useless. We don't want to completely discard the mind. It's just that we're using it on the wrong thing. The mind is here to observe the outside world and become really clever at things, right? Like knowing how this specific piece of engineering happens or inventing flying. I mean, how's that for living magic that we almost do things a disservice by calling them magic because it makes them seem like these like otherworldly things that only special gifted people can do, that it's otherworldly, that it's in some kind of fantasy. But if you told a person 100 years ago, there's going to be a machine that helps people like defy gravity and move from one place to the other side of the earth, you'd be like, no, that's magic. That's fantasy. That doesn't exist, right? So think about how many things are actual living magic with a small m, right? Like FaceTime, like the fact that we're recording this over Zoom, like the fact that you're able to use your phone as a freaking flashlight. Are you kidding me? Without electricity? I mean, it's just insane. And there are these things that are so embedded that were once these outstretched far ideas, but someone initiated their mechanics enough to let their brain then be free to invent something crazy like that, right? So it's not that the mind is not, it's not useful. It's supposed to be in charge of the outside world and making dreams reality and concretizing things and bringing things into real time. but the aura is in charge of your life, your genius, your ahas, your realizations, the way you move through the world. And so if we are clear on whose territory is what, that's when we really start to see jumps, literally jumps in alignment, where sometimes I'll ask you like, how did you do that? And you'll be like, I don't know. Or you'll ask me the same and I'd be like, I had no idea. I've never seen you put ice on your drink before, but I just felt like you needed it today. Or I did it with someone the other day, because my gift 19 is also, it's tied to food and spirit or spirituality. So one day I just asked someone, oh, do you want a kombucha? And I don't drink kombucha. I've never seen them drink a kombucha. And they were like, actually, yeah, I really feel like one. How did you know? I'm like, I didn't know. I just felt it. And the more you stay in that zone, the more just comes online to you, and you can't really control it, because you sometimes will have a flash every day and then it will go away for 3 weeks and then it will reappear. As long as you stay in that zone of inviting the unknown into your life and inviting those mystical forces to guide you without you stopping them when they come in and tell you to do something and say, hold on, but that doesn't make sense. Why would I say that? Or why would I think that? You just let it come through you like a child would. Like a child would just be receiving something, an urge to say something or do something, and then just act on it, right? That's the activation of our gifts there. And that's that mystical force, because like you said, you watch it come through you and then you realize, oh, I actually am smart, or I actually am gifted, yep, or I do have something special. I'm sitting on something here that I have no visibility over. I just only get brief glimpses and peaks, but they're good and juicy enough that I still want to devote myself to that thing that only shows itself to me in those moments it decides to. And I cannot control that it's going to be, you know, showing itself to me all the time on my terms when I want it, for me to trust that it's there.
I think it is really important too and helpful what you said earlier, where it's like, it's not that some of us are just more gifted and special than others. It's that every single human is seated with something that has access to this level of specialness. And so it really isn't like, oh, I'm this intelligent person. Because honestly, if I did think that way, it probably would prevent me from actually being able to watch it happen. Because the human me, the ego me is like, doesn't always feel worthy of like being smart. It's just, that's just a fact of like sometimes what being a human is. And like for you, you're like, maybe I don't necessarily always see myself as being able to take good care of people, because what does that even mean? And so it's like, oh, I get to watch this gift happen. I'm actually an observer of this gift existing in life. I don't actually have to be like the one responsible. The human me doesn't have to be responsible for making this gift happen. I just need to like get out of its way.
Exactly. And that really helps when you don't take your giftedness personally. So what does that mean? That means that being gifted has nothing to do with how worthy you are. It is just a fact of life. It is a energetic equation that the universe is a self-preserving, energetically efficient machine that would not bother incarnating you if it didn't want to seed a gift inside you. So it's really important to take that in, because I have had many years of my life when I didn't feel gifted, when my ego was getting in the way, being like, I have to feel special for me to like myself. And where does that come? It comes in comparison. More special than others, less special than others. And either one of those is an incorrect belief. And either one of those is ego, because it's creating separation and difference to feel special from other human beings. So it has to come from this decision that you make to say, it's not about me, and I'm not going to use this human set of conditions of what it is to have a human life to judge my own worth. That is above our spiritual pay grade. So we have got to stop with this. We have got to do our duty and say, yes, we are all inherently worthy, but I want to do this with my life to actually share my worth with the world. And then what beautifully happens when you approach it with that service consciousness is that you do reaffirm to yourself that you are contributing to life. And then it's easier to feel worthy. But you are not going to get worth by sitting on your meditation pillow and connecting to your inherent worth if you're then your brain, right, your eyes don't see you actually putting your money where your mouth is. You have to do that for yourself, and you deserve to do that for yourself. You deserve to say, yes, I believe I'm inherently worthy. And that's the spiritual, mystical, conceptual side of sitting on your meditation pillow and understanding that every human life is beautiful and worthy. But then the second part is, I'm going to prove it to myself. I deserve to see it. I deserve to share it. I deserve to do my soul a favor and exchange this with the world around me. Because otherwise, if we just wanted to live in concept, then we wouldn't need to come here on this physical plane and play with matter and interact with life. So that's the second piece that is so important, because you're not going to get satisfaction just from believing you're inherently worthy. There's no way that's going to happen. And life does that because it's trying to push you into matter. Like, get in this sandbox and freaking play with other human beings and freaking play with the colors and the shapes and the sizes and the potentials and all the things you could do with that gift. Don't just sit on it. Don't just sit on it. It's a gold mine. Move, you know? And that was actually one of the very, it was really interesting. That was something that really helped me, funny enough, when I was in my 20s and in that place where I was stuck and not believing my worth and not doing anything about it and overthinking it and questioning it and all this kind of thing and just kind of feeling a bit sorry for myself. I did a meditation one day with one of my Kabbalah teachers, and we channeled in one of the now deceased Kabbalists, and I never knew him, but she corroborated it sounded exactly like something he would have said. And he said, "You're sitting on a gold mine, move." And it was so clear to me in that moment that it wasn't personal. It wasn't you are special. It was like, get out of your own freaking way. Get out of your mind and launch yourself into life. Get involved. And I think, interestingly, right now, we all have these big, deep existential fears. And so sometimes these other things, these other preoccupations about deciding our worth and stuff, we give them so much energy because we understand that underneath that, if that wasn't our worry, might have to face the real worries, you know? Like,
yeah,
it's easier to sit and think about your worth than to risk being in the game of life, and then you have to actually think about failing. You have to risk not being so good at it as you dreamt it would be. You have to risk getting that dream and then realizing that wasn't the big dream, or whatever it is. And so it's almost like we protect ourselves with these like small time distraction fears, because the big ones are so scary and existential.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want you to know, if you're listening to this, that true ascension is actually knowing that those big existential fears aren't bigger than you. When you actually come up against them in life, you reach a point where you aren't scared and you say, okay, I'm going to go towards them. They're showing up for me now, because I've gotten rid of kidding myself that being a certain size or not being worthy enough or whatever, I've kind of moved past those. And you get to the point in the road where those ones show up and you sit with them and you go, yeah, they're scary as hell, but I've lived through them and I've made it past them. And I realized they didn't control me. And then I was fine. And that's when you realize that you do have a piece of God inside you. You do have a piece of the universe inside you, because you're playing in the big leagues then, right? And you not only play in the big leagues, you can, and you realize you're better at it than you ever thought, but you cannot realize you're better at it than you thought from a place of only imagining it. It's like when you face those things, and sometimes life is going to give you those, right? Like, sometimes life is going to push you up against your biggest fears, right? But other times it's almost like, let me just give up these small time things, because maybe in the distance between not protecting myself with these small time things, I'm not going to come up against massive fears or massive things that I'm, you know, worrying about will happen. Maybe on the other side of those distractions is a freedom, is a levity, is the enjoyment of everything going right, is the enjoyment of my own life as it's unfolding, is the enjoyment of feeling more love because I'm not so distracted by these other thoughts, right? So yes, on the other side, sometimes is big, deep precipices, but on the other side is also like disproportionately more enjoyment, peace, lack of fears, lack of things going wrong than we thought could exist, but we can't see over that hill if we're still living in the small game. And we are ready for this now. We really are. If you're listening to this, especially already, like, there's something inside you that knows that this is true. I'm really not saying anything that is revolutionary from what your soul knows. It's just a reminder that what you know what you secretly hope to be true is true. And we all need these reminders all the freaking time, because life, the way we've set up life, sets it up as if the small game is everything. And so our work is the mental discipline to keep plugging back into the truth that there is a bigger game and we are bigger. Our vessels are much bigger than we think that they are. And the way we get there is our strategy and our authority. It is trusting and saying the unknown. You know what? I don't know where this is going, but there's got to be something inside me that's on loan to me. I may as well give it energy and see what happens. It's worth risking this, you know, it's worth using this one precious time I get here on something bigger than just, am I worthy?
Right. And I think it's worth reiterating here that when we talk about your giftedness, we're not just talking about your career. I feel like people immediately go, oh, but I don't have a side hustle to apply my gifts to. Here's a really great example. My mom is gift 41 and she's learning to apply her gifts to not just her career, but also to like every area of her life. And she's going through right now her parents having to go into a retirement or a assisted living home and figuring out the right route. And she also has a 5-1 profile. So she is someone that can literally figure anything out, solve any challenge. But the trip up with the 5-1 is that when they overcommit themselves, then they do start to feel like resentful of like no one else is stepping up and helping. Mm-hmm. So she's had to learn how to only like apply her challenge solving to the areas that are important to her. And she is gift 41. And so she's really someone that can see, how would you explain gift 41? Someone that can just like see the right route for things. Is that
so? Gift 41, again, the gifts, and people ask us sometimes, like, why are they described differently in the app and in the book? And it's because there's so many layers. I could literally write a book about each gift because they go so deep and there's so many layers to them. So the intention is always that I don't want to be repeating myself so much, so that in each avenue that you come across us, I hopefully bring something different to the whole picture. So gift 41, though, essentially is someone who can see many different, all the different possible outcomes from a situation. So their brain, I like to say, is like a probability computer where you see all the different ways that the situation could unfold. And obviously the 5-1 profile, having a 5 in your profile means that you have this save the day energy and you love to solve problems. But part of the work is to realize like which problems are yours to solve. And that's where you use your authority to figure out which ones are, rather than your ego.
Right. So I like reiterated that to her, and also knowing that other people in the family will also be better at other aspects of this than her, which is really hard for her because she is someone that likes to take charge of things, be the person solving, and she identifies as someone who can solve those problems. And as she sort of like learned to use her strategy and authority to only solve the problems that are her responsibility and really own that, like, I am the person that can see all possible outcomes and I can help direct us as a group towards the right outcome and then let everyone else fall in with their things. It's like this whole situation has become so much more easeful for her. And so it's in even those areas of our lives that we could like see how gifted we are and like how useful we can be.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we always say when you play your role, it becomes easier for everyone else around you to play their role, because you're not stepping on other people's toes and you're creating those little, those shunted paths of openings next door to you that you've just gone down for other people to jump in and join when it's their path. And so, you know, a lot of the time, I love that you use this example, because think about how much easier her life is, how much less heartache she's getting. And the interesting thing is, funny enough, you don't really have to worry about your purpose when you double down on your gifts. So you can use them in any area of your life. The universe is going to go, oh, look who's showing up and using their gifts. Here's 25 different kinds of jobs you could do, you know, because all the universe wants to do is it's always going to respect your free will. So it's never going to push alignment on you if right now your soul is in a place where it's not ready for that level of alignment. The second you start to activate it, it wants to use you in the world because you are a good ambassador for its agenda, frankly speaking. So you are showing up on behalf of the light and you are acting like the light. It's going to put you in places and people and situations that it needs you to be in front of to create more via entrainment, to create more alignment for other people and jump other people up a level, right? Even if those people are super evolved, you never know how, even if they're super aligned, you never know, you might just contribute to another level. And we all have millions of next levels, right? So that never stops. And so this is where like the purpose kind of comes secondary, because actually then you know you have that thing where you don't depend on the purpose, you depend on the gift. And as long as you know you're sharing the gifts, that can take so many different forms, so many different job descriptions, so many different situations where it comes in to save you, because that's your manual and how to deal with and approach and meet every situation of your life. And that's what also takes away so much mental struggle. And kind of what you're saying here, though, it's also what enables ego death, right? Because she knows her strategy and authority, what's happening as a result is she's having ego death in the part of her ego that likes to feel like it needs to feel like it can save every single situation in order to survive. So it actually also ends up snuffing the ego out, but she's not so mad at it because she sees a good outcome even though the ego's died. So in a way, it's also like a more comfortable way sometimes. It doesn't mean ego death is always great, but it's just a more gentle, indirect way of killing your ego, because then you realize like, oh, I don't need to save every single day. And I'm actually kind of enjoying it more when I don't have to save every single day. I just want to do the ones I want.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, wow, that's so much better. How great. And things are working out, you know, without me, you know, judging and criticizing and feeling sorry for myself and all the things that our ego does when it's being strengthened.
The last thing that I want you to share, because I do think that along the theme of understanding that we are ambassadors of these gifts, like it's not an ego thing that we are here to share these with the world. Will you explain that conveyor belt theory that you like told me about, just so that people understand cosmically of like, there's an unfolding of when we're born and the gifts that have to be present. You remember what you're telling
yeah.
me? Will you explain that? Because I really think that helps us understand of like, no, you're just here to play your role.
So yeah. So imagine that the universe has this like perfect symphony and proportion of different kinds of humans that it needs on the planet right now to move us forward as a whole. So you are literally on a production line, right? You are on this conveyor belt that the universe is literally spitting out different kinds of humans in an order, in a marching order that it needs, so that it's always got the potential for us all to get there together. So in that conveyor belt, it goes, okay, right now we need some people who are good at planning. And then after that, we need some people who are good at understanding. And then we need good explainers. And then we need nurturers. And then we need some more planners, throw some in. We need strategic people. We need this kind of people. So the mix that you are is only one small cog of the exact mix that the universe has chosen to exist on the planet for the planet's current evolution, right? So this is where we are really one cog of the whole, but you have to respect that yours is perfectly designed and it is not one hair out of place in that conveyor belt that the universe is churning out in a production line. And so we all need each person to show up in the exact position that they are placed in, because no human can do it all, right? We can't get there together. There is no messiah thing, you know, but it's also that on the other side of that, no one is left out of that equation. And if you back out of yours, you are affecting the person that came before you and the person that came after you. And then there's all of a sudden, if you are here to be an explainer on one specific part of life, you are opting out of that. You are literally doing everyone else in your little team, all the explainers, right? You're doing them a disservice, because there's a person who comes to explain how laptops work, and there's a person that comes to explain how politics work. And so you let down your little family of incarnation cross people when you don't take care of your little piece of what your incarnation theme is. And also in the procession order of, okay, well, after explainers come planners, for example, it doesn't, but you need enough explaining for the planning to be done well. So you really do affect everybody else in the karmic production line.
I just find that so fascinating and actually relieving, because we want to believe that we are not alone in this world. And we also want to believe like, oh, what if I actually do listen to what they're saying and I go try this? What if I'm the broken one? It's like, you couldn't be.
I know. And that's really the work of a lifetime, is to have the one part of you that knows better and believes better hold the hand kicking and screaming sometimes are the one that goes, no, I am broken. I have so much evidence in my life that I'm unlovable, that I'm defective, that I'm whatever. And that part of you that believes better to just get a little bit stronger every day and say, I get you. It's okay to think that today. We're still going to go ahead and you can have your cry and you can have your fit and you can have your existential crisis. And that's okay. And let's watch ourselves have that existential crisis as we move forward, rather than have the existential crisis be the reason why we paralyze ourselves. And that's really the difference, is that we haven't got enough. We don't talk enough about you can listen to that part, honor that part, look at it like it's just a cute part of being human and we all have it. And that makes us kind of adorable and tender. And that is a part of why we forget that we are the light. It's like that's the part of us that makes this whole game possible. It's like, if we knew we were the light already, there wouldn't be the journey, right? So we have to hold that reality that's embedded in us for that very reason, that we had to forget to remember, and yet believe that we want enough to march towards the remembering anyway. And we really are ready for this. And this is what I really want to say, is that no one is going to tell you that this works. And we are all flying through space without this safety net. We won't see how magical it is, how deeply we do affect other people, how deeply our gifts do show up for us, how much that procession line is real. Like, I can't even see it yet, because there's not enough of us that are showing up to a big enough extent. So my invitation and my request is like, please, can enough of us go there together and show ourselves a different way of living life? Because that's going to be such a more rewarding way. And it's also going to be the thing that validates to us that the way we secretly wish life could exist actually does. And we deserve that.